This has got you written all over it. The Mets stayed in a Pittsburgh hotel that also hosted a convention of people dressed up as furry creatures.
Oh, no.
Is this Wilbon's worst nightmare?
No, it's worse than my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is mascots.
Look at that.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
What are they thinking, Bobby?
All right, let me tell you something. This is what here's the real story here. In 40 years worth of being on the road, traveling around this great land of ours, checking into countless hotels of all stripes, here's what I've learned. There's a frightening amount of subcultures out there, Mike, and they all have conventions.
Yeah, but you've never
and
seen
I
these
just
people.
Want them all to understand one thing.
I've never seen them.
Stay away from me.
Thank you very much.
They might have had some information, you know, whatever, people looking into it back during the Jade Helm thing that they saw where FEMA had taken over some abandoned Walmarts, you know. So there, you know.
Right, right, yeah.
Perhaps a kernel of truth to that. But they ended
right,
up.
Right, I see what you're saying. Yeah. It was like, yeah, if anything ever happened, they'd use an old Walmart, so we'll weave it into the story, yeah.
And I've seen those used before, like in different natural disasters. That's what they looked for. I was out in Louisiana during Katrina, and they used like empty Sears buildings and that type of place, you know, for, you know, it makes sense.
I feel like Aaron's trying to jump in. Aaron, what do you got, buddy?
Yeah, I keep trying to jump in. Sort of going back to what actually everybody was saying about, you know, what's different now? And it sort of connects to the sort of UFO thing about why do we trust the government now? Why do we trust these people to use the Walmarts as detention centers now? And I think it all and Jones's about face, leaving aside the Russia stuff, or part of the Russia stuff. I think what it comes down to is with Trump, I don't think there's been a politician. You know, not even, you know, back in the day, Ross Perot, a politician. And yeah, he's a politician. Sorry, he's not just a businessman who has had such anti-globalist rhetoric, regardless of which political party we've seen since Coolidge, maybe. You know, there's been a, you know, you could point to conspiracy theorists could point to things in everybody from Hoover up through Obama that sort of say, well, they're secretly, you know, they're pushing a globalist agenda because that was sort of the trend in the Western world. And I think Trump bucks that trend enough that you're able to throw, or conspiracy theorists are able to throw part of the rule book out the window. Trump changes the landscape enough with regard to, you know, the anti-globalism that it's okay if he does some of this stuff because he's the only one we can trust to do it to the right. He's the only one putting the right little kids in the abandoned Walmarts.
Right.
Everybody
right.
else would be doing it in the service of the New World Order. Trump's doing it, you know, to make America great again.
He's the great disruptor. That's what it is. He's like the great disruptor.
He is. And I am so sort of innately anti-revolutionary that when anybody talks about he's going to just disrupt things, I get queasy. It's like, no, please don't. You know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm okay with, you know, a government that functions. But I think that's the big difference is Trump has tapped into this of all the trends to tap into. He's tapped into the anti-globalist paranoia. But I think he has, and I think that's the difference maker in some of this.
Now, part of the deal, though, is like, you know, when you think of the globalists, there are these guys behind the scenes doing stuff, screwing the little guy over, right?
Right.
All these secret deals and basically, if you know, you've looked at a lot of the reporting, that's what Trump's been up to with all these secret deals with the Saudis, it looks like,
mm-hmm.
and Russia, you know, so it's a conspiracy within a conspiracy.
Yeah, and I think there's an element of, you know, cognitive dissonance going along with this, that, that if Trump's doing it, then it must be in the best interest of those of us who support Trump.
You got to trust
and we
the
trust.
Right, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's It's all of a piece.
Which is frightening because it feels like the rest of us, certainly the four of us, are just, we're just like along for the ride, being like, all right, when the fuck's this ride going to be over? Because I've had enough of the great disruptor. Thanks. And barring some kind of like shenanigans, I feel like the majority of the voting country at this point, based on November, anything can happen in the next 2 years. But I feel like people are just kind of over this whole thing. You know, the ones who were in the middle are kind of tipped their hand, gave their indication earlier this month that they're just over this whole disruptor thing. And they're like, let's just get back to normal, please.
You got to look at all the gerrymandering and that stuff that goes on, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I can only worry about one thing at a time, dude.
it was definitely positive. We're getting into politics, so never mind.
I could even pull the camera back a little bit and not even say, like, the voting public. I just think that, like, the zeitgeist has just had enough of, like, this fucking guy. he's sucking the oxygen out of, like, human race. It's
mm-hmm.
like, dude,
yeah.
No, we just do not want to deal with this anymore. Just go and be a reality star or something, man. Like, the world cannot revolve around you much longer.
The anti-globalism and isolating the United States as a nation is very concerning on a lot of levels, you know, not just military, but financially too. It's a big picture thing, and there's a lot of confidence that there is a plan, much less to trust in it at all costs. He's been by the seat of his pants since day one, and it's from my seat, it looks important that my community be able to economically pass the money around, and as far as self-defense, that we trust each other enough, like right here in the town I live in, to not be on alert all the time and always worried about attacking my neighbor before they attack me. And I think that grows out, you know, into the county and into the state and as a nation and into the globe, that history, and of course Aaron could tell me if I'm right here, but history generally does not smile on nations financially that wanted to do it all themselves and telling everybody to leave us alone, does it?
No, not really. I mean, since the 19th century, well, the 18th century, there's been this, you know, economic globalization, and until, you know, the last, you know, 70 years or so, it was economic globalization for the benefit of a handful of, you know, imperialistic European nations and the United States and Japan after a certain point. And then, you know, we go to these sort of regional trading blocks that work with each other, and there's been this sort of, you know, neoliberal, you know, breaking, you know, free trade movement and breaking down tariffs and things. And I will say, just as a teacher of history, I never in a million years dreamed that I would have a semester where I wouldn't have to explain to my students what a tariff was. My entire career, nobody under the age of 70 knows what a tariff is. And now, you know, everybody knows. It's why my car is so expensive. You know, it's why GM's closing plants. You know, that, you know, well, corporate bonuses are why GM's closing plants. But, you know, this idea of retrenchment and the idea that we can go all, you know, Holly Smoot on everything is that's a nerdy reference, but that protectionism is the way forward it's a weird sort of throwback. Yeah.
Backward thinking.
Yeah.
Well, it's in line with the whole idea of, like, this is getting almost too political, but we'll pivot to UFOs at some point. But, yeah, it goes to the idea of, like, the whole thing where it's like, I'm going to bring coal back. It's like, why? why, you know? You're not reviving the travel agent industry, dude, which probably there were probably more travel agents than there were coal miners. But it's like, who the fuck's helping the travel agents? Nobody. So you know, if your industry becomes obsolete, you find another job, man.
It's propaganda, dude. There's no real logic.
I know. I try to apply logic to this crazy world.
Well, here's our pivot, then. It is propaganda, and it's disturbing anyone wanted to believe that there would be coal mines thriving again to the extent they would put their trust in this guy. And the pivot there is, if you can believe what a career intelligence agent tells you that he's saying is off the record and don't tell anybody I told you, or I can't go public with this yet, but I'm going to let you in on it because I want you to follow the leads. And it happens to be something that you wanted to think was true. That is, you know, stronger than 3 feet of new rope. And it's very disturbing that, the whole coal industry thing was just campaign shtick, yet it still works. Even now, it still works.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think my outrage was directed at the, at the people who were, like, all about it, you know, who were like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let
people
me ask you this, Jack.
What they want to believe.
Let me ask you, Jack, because you're like a – I'll pivot back to UFOs in a sense, because this is a question I'm interested in, and I think that Jack has followed this story, I think, close enough. I've tried to follow close. This is a TTSA thing. But Jack, as most people know, is pretty masterful at sort of digging up documents and stuff like that, or knowing who else has documents. And I guess what I'm wondering is, like, we're coming up on, like, the one-year anniversary of this thing. Is a very basic question, but like I find that like I don't know the answer to it. Why don't we have any information about this? All of the documents or all of the information we have about this group is what they've given us, right? We have no FOIAs and all that stuff have produced nothing that we can use, you know, for research, right? Or anything at all.
Yes and no. The gist of your question and is correct. Yeah, there are some researchers that have dug up enough information to clarify, to verify that some of these programs, like the ATIP, I think they call it, did exist. We're really handcuffed on to what extent and exactly what it did. There's a lot of information going around that the custody of the documents isn't clear. Same old UFO stuff, new decade, that we're not sure about trusting the sources. As fate would have it, I checked my P.O. box, and just today I had an update from the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I have 3 FOIA requests in with them on the ATIP stuff and Bigelow and To the Stars, the meat of the story, and you know how long ago I requested that, months now.
Yeah, yeah.
And now my closest one to the beginning, they tell me I'm like 960 or something on the queue, in the queue. And then there's 2 others I have that are still 4 digits. So, you know, just wait. And I really don't have an explanation. We haven't been, you know, there's some good guesses, but no, we haven't been given a verified explanation from the Defense Intelligence Agency that tells us why we don't have these documents yet, what's having to be assessed. We just don't know.
Right.
We're just waiting on it. And which really brings us to a point that when you get all of this whispering in the shadows among intelligence agents or the consultants and then the writers and the researchers, one of the reasons I started relying much more on the FOIA process and asking people questions on the record is it's against the law, and it should be, to be discussing classified information with people that hold security clearances. And I almost feel like there's been times in the history of the UFO genre that investigators almost wanted to get called out on the carpet by the intelligence agencies and investigated for what their interests were in certain things and why they were hitting up the agency's personnel with questions. Because it's like, you know, the old analogy of hitting a hornet's nest. Like, if you, and then I think they try to use that as evidence that they're on the right trail. And that's not necessarily true, as much as if a guy won't talk to you on the record and you don't have documents, well, then just shut up. You know, I mean, it's classified information, man, you know?
Well, I'm going to say this, and just I apologize for, you know, being effusive here, but fucking hats off to you, Jack, because, and I exempt present company excluded because we're buddies with Jack, so we're just leaning on Jack to do the work, so there's no need for Adam or me or Aaron to also file FOIAs, because when Jack gets the shit, as you can tell, he's going to tell us. But hats off to you, Jack, because every clown and respected person in this field has an opinion on this thing, and there's probably 3 people who have actually done the work to try and get, you know, the information from the government. You know, to try to follow up on this shit in a logical, verifiable way. You know, everybody else is just content to go to have a hot take. They just want to have a hot take. They don't need to do the research. They just, you know, it's a hot take culture. So, you know, I love you, man, for this, because that's why I hit you with, like, the only real straight question of this this whole show so far, because it was like, okay, let's get to the fucking bottom of this as far as what we can tell. We actually know, which is just what these people say, and I guess some documents that confirm that this thing once existed.
Yeah, like we can see there were calls for research proposals and things like that. There, you know, there's some guys, like I say, that have done some good work putting the shell around it, but looks like it's going to be a while before we get the meat and potatoes. But thanks, Tim. I appreciate that. And I really appreciate you guys' work, too. I'm glad I have something to contribute because, you know, if there's somebody that has a connection with everybody in this industry that's worth talking to, it would be Banal. And Adam's work, he's got some great stuff coming out on misinformation. And as you said earlier, Aaron is literally a historian and has just a great podcast going where he objectively looks at the stuff. And it can really be fascinating from, as these guys are doing, just putting the verified facts on the table and saying, now tell me what you think this indicates. You know, yep. Like you don't have to spin it every time. Yeah.
Right.
I would say that you know, I think Tim, especially that your style, your voice, and what you've done for the field in terms of podcasting, it's brought it to a level that I don't think many people have ever seen. Like you know, the guy said, anybody who's worth knowing, you have talked to. So that's given you, I think a breadth of perspective on what's been going on especially over the last 15 years or so. And me, I don't really understand anything that's happened after about 1974. So in the UFO field. So I just think that's good stuff. I think you've got a lot of credibility just based on your ability that you've shown.
Oh, thank you, man. I had a question for you actually. Now I had a very specific question for Jack. I'm afraid now because I don't necessarily have one for Adam. Oh, now I do. Okay. But for you, Aaron, because I consider you, people, when I had you on the show, people were like, is Banal passing the torch to Aaron? It's like, listen, dude, I'm fucking Ric Flair. I'll never retire, man. I'll never retire. But I will say that Aaron is the Shawn Michaels to my Ric Flair, okay? So that's as a bonus. I think that's as high as an esteem. Or insert your favorite wrestler. I think Aaron will appreciate the Shawn Michaels.
If I can be the Arn Anderson to your Ric Flair, that would be fine.
Oh, come on, man. You're better than Arn Anderson.
No,
come on, man.
Nobody's better than Arn, man. Best spine buster in the business.
That's true. And a hell of a promo. Hell of a promo.
That's right.
What I was thinking of today, when I was thinking about talking to you guys, is interesting because you and I, as people have probably surmised us now, we have a passionate interest in professional wrestling. And we also, I hate to sort of dredge this up, but of course we are all members, card-carrying members of the Scheme Gene Research Community. We're not going to get into that, but it bears mentioning. Scheme Gene RC on Twitter. What I found interesting, I was thinking about today, thinking about tonight's show, was this what I'm calling here in this question, the Patreon bubble, where it's like the entertainment, infotainment industry, if you will, has become so compartmentalized that really it's like a feeding frenzy in a way. I'm not sure necessarily if it's a good thing, but every like if you look at your cable bill prop or your credit card bill, it's like chances are if you're like me, you're a consumer of this stuff, you know, you're dropping like $10 on Netflix and $10 on, you know, Hulu and $10 on WWE, and maybe you're throwing $5 of this podcast on Patreon. It's like it adds up. It's really remarkable in a sense. It makes you wonder sort of where is this sort of like cottage industry of podcasting going when all of these shows, they're competing for Patreon dollars, if you will.
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, my wife and I have had the annual announcement. Can we look at all this stuff we subscribe to and figure out what we actually use? And I'm like, I use it all.
Right.
But, you know, the Patreon stuff, it's what I like about it as a consumer is I can give money directly to the person that is producing the stuff I want to listen to. And I think that's great. Best case scenario, it keeps it unsullied. Worst case scenario, we end up in a situation where there are so many people doing Patreon stuff and relying and hoping that that's going to be the thing that breaks them, you know, out of having to, you know, be a Walmart greeter or Uber driver or something and allow them to make money. To make money in this business, whatever this business may be, that it just becomes overwhelming, and I'm just like, I don't care about, you know, any of you. How many Patreons or Kickstarters or anything like this have we seen where it just fizzles out, you know? Because especially if you're doing a podcast that, you know, despite what some people may think, very few people are making a living with their paranormal podcast. People have been like, you should be on Patreon. I'm like, no, I shouldn't be, because then, you know, I'd have like obligations to produce things, and there hasn't been.
Yeah, that's why I never charged a cent for my show.
I haven't had a new episode in about a month because I was sick, and then it was Thanksgiving, and then it was, oh my gosh, my job that actually pays the mortgage is, you know, very, very busy. So, I don't want that responsibility, but it can be a sort of, is it a bridge to professionalism, or is it a tip jar, you know, that we sort of get guilted into tossing our, you know, $3 here, $3 there. Pretty soon, you know, you're talking some real money. I think it's sort of. You know, it can cut both ways. I think it can promote some great personalities in the field, and I think it can give, you know, every idiot with a microphone some, you know, hope that this is their new career.
That hope will be dashed very soon. They don't have
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a real razor's edge. Like, believe me, I don't begrudge anybody for getting paid for working in this field. So, I get paid for working in this field. So who the fuck am I to, you know, you should all be getting paid. You know, if you're doing too much shit for free, you're crazy.
I think it's fine, but, you know, it's just like, yeah, tip jar, something to, if you can cover your expenses. If you're looking beyond that, then you're looking at putting in a lot of time, you know, to...
Right. This is going to sound incredibly pretentious, so I apologize. But part of me, I don't subscribe to any of these Patreons, so I'm either really an unbiased observer... Either I'm an incredibly unbiased observer, or I'm just a total asshole. So I don't subscribe to any of these, but I see all the, you know, people promoting their things, and it's like, I worry, and this is where I'm going to sound like a snob, I worry about the state of the art, where it's like, they're more interested in appeezing, like, their 35 Patreon subscribers, yeah. So they'll, you know, and it's just like, put out your shit, man.
Yeah, I'm making a special episode for all my Patreons, or however you say that only the insiders will get, so subscribe here, and yeah, spending time fixated on that, you know, just...
Yeah, I subscribe to one Patreon. It's a pro wrestling thing, and it's Tony Schiavone's podcast, where they basically MST3K old pay-per-views, and it's hilarious. And I like it because there's some extra shows, and Tony Schiavone, who is a wrestling announcer for, you know, 20 years, he actually called me on the phone, and we talked for like 15 minutes, which was really, really cool. That's really it, and that's because, you know, I was, you know, listening to the show for a year, and I was a fan. You know, it takes a lot for me to kick in that $10 a month or whatever, and I think there's, you know, like you said, Adam, I think there's going to be a lot of people who think that, you know, if they build a Patreon page, you know, people will be so enthralled by their extra content that they won't somehow magically piss off the bulk of their listeners who aren't paying anything. And then, you know, you got a rapidly shrinking audience.
Exactly, yeah. It's a real razor's edge, you know. So to me, it's like it, – because, yeah, because as a person who – I can say – there was one of these supplemental programs involving a character named Teddy Bear that I really wanted to listen to, but it was like I wouldn't – first of all, I couldn't subscribe, but I – because the process was incredibly complicated, but it was also like, that's all anyone wants to hear, dude. Put it on the free show. Why? I'm not going to fucking pay for the, you know. You're not pulling the wool over my eyes. It's clear what you're doing. You're holding the best shit back for the thing.
Or, you know, sort of the flip side of that, and just, you know, if I can just, you know, be a jerk about people's podcasts. When they talk about what's on their premium or Patreon or whatever thing, and it's something that is clearly worse than what they're putting out for free. It's like, why would I want to pay money for that? That sounds terrible.
Right.
You know, you're doing this all wrong. You should be No, seriously, I mean, I don't like it.
Here are all the inside chat we had before we started the show. Yeah,
this
right,
our conversations in podcast form. But, you know, from a business perspective, yes, put the good shit on Patreon. Don't, you know, here's the great stuff for free if you listen to this, you know, Blue Apron commercial. And then, you know, if you give me $20 a month, you'll get to hear me talk for 15 minutes about, you know, why, about how all the stuff in my basement, you know, got mildew because of a vent that was clogged, and that's my story for this week, or something like that.
All right, can I just keep you guys a little past the hour? We'll just wrap it up here with, we'll just wrap it up with some fun stuff with Adam, and then, all right, cool. Yeah, thank you to all the live listeners. I hope you're all having fun. This is pretty much how I hoped and envisioned this conversation would go. After I was no Sully Sullenberger taking the plane off from the runway tonight, but I think we hit cruising altitude pretty well, and it's been a fun ride tonight. But you're absolutely right, Aaron. Where it's like the leftover shit, where it's like. And then there's a half hour we're just going to talk about the guest and say shit that we forgot to mention during the show and, you know, bring up points that we wish we had said when the guest was on, but we didn't have the balls to say it, so we're going to...
Well, Tim, how
you know,
do you
one
know,
of the big issues
know,
I had with the guest was now that they're not here to respond...
Tim, how do you know if you don't subscribe to any Patreon that's what's going on?
Because I see the thing, and it's like, I see the thing, and then it's like, and then Billy and Bob discussed this week's guest, and they talked about what the guy talked about, and it's like, well, dude, I don't need the director's cut, man. Like, geez.
Now, I've been a guest on some podcasts where they have me stay, you know, an extra 15, 20 minutes, and it's stuff for the Patreon subscribers, and the couple of ones that I've done, and I won't mention them, but they asked, you know, it's like, it was just like a little bit extra, like, you know, just like that 20 minutes more. It wasn't anything super different, but it was good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, this
that's
is,
fine.
This
that
is
I
a,
like, actually.
This is
yeah.
a neat idea. I like that. I like the idea that, you know, this is just a little bit more. It's not something completely different to what people would be expecting otherwise. It's, we've got, you know, these three questions that were a little weird, and, you know, we're saving them for, you know, the hardcore
the post show
fans
yeah.
of the show. Yeah. And I think that is so cool. And I always love whenever anybody asks, you know, can you stay and do something extra for the Patreon people? I'm like, hell yeah. Why wouldn't I?
That's when you ask for some money.
I've never been able to figure out. How do you ask for money?
Harlan Ellison style. Yeah, if you pay me, otherwise I'm out of here.
I'm just way too Midwestern to ask for money. It's like, I'm more like, you know, golly, can I pay you for the privilege of just talking to you? Golly, you're so nice.
Yeah, it's especially tough in this field because, like, there's this prevalent attitude. And again, I said it earlier, like, God bless you, if you can get paid for this work, please do. But there's, like, this prevalent obnoxious attitude. It's not like in a lot of – it's not like in music or film, really, or anything else like that where it's like, you're a truth seeker, man. How can you – this should be free for the world, man, where it's like, no, dude, it shouldn't – you know. It's like if you have a subscription podcast, go for it. but to have the attitude where it's like everything here should be free because this is bigger than, like, money. And the thing that upsets me is that the people who say that, they're the ones who have, like, jobs and shit and don't devote their time to making free shit. So it's like, dude, like, come on. I'm supposed to work and make free shit while you just work and consume free shit. That doesn't work for me.
Yeah, that's a big issue because I've got a day job and I would never ever begrudge anybody the ability to make money on their on anything creative they do. I think I am so lucky that I can do a podcast as strictly a hobby to give me an excuse to, you know, buy mixing boards and stuff, you know, rather than, you know, just trying to be something I want to make a career out of, because, you know, I don't. And, you know, so I will, you know, put people in a position to possibly choose between giving money to me and giving money to somebody who's trying to make it, you know, because you should always give money to the person who's trying to make it. Don't give money to me. I would just buy, like, vintage Transformers and you know, stuff like that. And pro wrestling videotapes. I don't give me your money. It'll end badly for my family. But, you know, I love the idea that there are avenues now where people who are passionate about these creative endeavors have a way to go directly to people rather than having to work through some sort of complex system like back in the day and probably end up with nothing. And I think sort of like Adam said, you know, if you don't have any talent, you're going to be pretty disappointed when you try to make a career out of it because, you know, nothing's going to happen. But we've got systems now in place where people with talent can, you know, make a little bit of money to sort of support their costs that way, and I think that's cool.
Right. And the other part, the other part of it too is I try to be out of the bubble as much as possible, but in this I guess it sounds arrogant. In this rare instance, I'm in the bubble in a sense where it's like, as I framed that question sort of about the Patreon thing, it's like, people sometimes forget, I forgot, that, you know, the shows we're thinking of, the shows we're familiar with, they're competing with, like, there's just millions of these Patreons for all kinds. Like you said, Tony Schiavone has one. You know, I'm sure if Adam looked, he could probably find a San Francisco Giants Patreon podcast or something like that. And that's kind of, I guess, what I meant by the Patreon bubble, where it's like, I wonder – if everybody is charging $3 for their shit, like, everybody's only getting $3. Like, it's just like, at the end of the day, they're going to look at this thing and be like, okay, well, I made, you know, $300 on this, but I also subscribed to, like, 50 Patreons for $3. So it's almost a wash.
I sort of equate the Patreon thing for podcasting to the ability for people to sort of what do we call it, indie publishing now? I don't want to say self-publishing because that, you know, that sort of has a connotation, but indie publishing, you know, print on demand stuff, you don't need to go through a publisher, and so that it's the same sort of thing, you know. There's a, you know, high risk, high reward as a consumer, right? It's like, here's a book that looks interesting, but but nobody thought this was worth selling except the guy who wrote it. So, you know, I've got to, if a book's from an established, you know, an actual publisher, at least somebody's got some skin in the game, you know, besides me. You know, so it's there's a whole bunch more stuff out there and you can find some great stuff. I think it's a good thing, but it also gives everybody the idea that just because they can publish a book, that they should publish a book. And I'm not sure that's entirely healthy for them, you know, and, you know, having written books that have sold very few copies because they're only being bought by, like, research libraries, you know, you learn to sort of disconnect your ego from sales numbers because otherwise you'll cry. But
yeah.
You know, if I'm publishing this thing myself, then it's all of me. You know, if I publish it through a publisher and it doesn't sell, I'm just like, suckers, you know, you're the ones who pay.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love the do-it-yourself ethos that comes from this, but it's exhausting, you know, as a consumer and I assume as a creator to be responsible for everything yourself and be responsible for vetting all of this self-created indie stuff that's out there now.
That's a good point of what all of our voices being raised leads us to with the social media and any of us could make a podcast or print a book is it gives this illusion, especially to certain demographics that might be less desirable to be in, that opinions are equal, that all opinions are equal. And that's not correct. Like when we were talking earlier, I might think I have an idea of what's happened in history when nations financially isolate themselves, but a historian knows. And these guesses aren't equal because we each can tweet or we each can put a post on a blog. And there's a whole lot of voices out there, and some of them shouldn't have gotten louder, but they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting to see, at the risk of all of us going on other tangents, it's interesting. I feel like, again, we're sort of elders in a sense of this thing. I think everybody here knows Walter Bosley. Was expressing to me the idea that, like, and I had talked previously about sort of like, I think when we look back on all this, like the last year is going to be seen to those of us who are sort of like really hardcore into this stuff as like a profound transition year, like the last 2 years or so, you know, because we lost like Jim Mars, Art Bell, Stan's retiring, Brad Steiger died. It's like there's it's like we were kind of – I felt like – I like the frog in the boiling water who sort of like got a flash of reality where it's like, wow, okay, things really are changing. We're really in a deep transitional phase in this whole field where it's like the legends are dying out at a faster pace than ever. And there really is quite the vacuum of voices. And I think that's why you're seeing sort of like this desperation or like break up into smaller factions and stuff like that of opinions and things like that, because there's really no centralized even like paranormal zeitgeist, if you will. All the legends are leaving us, and it's like we never really in the wrestling parlance, we never made new stars, so
right.
There's no one really to carry this, and so that's why you see things like QAnon and the TTSA sort of like filling that vacuum of like, okay, well, who are we going to put on TV?
Right. And I think another thing you see with established stars, if you will,
Alex Jones. That's how Alex Jones has risen to the top. It's like, because there's no
who's left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As these established people back away, either because they've died or because Sam Friedman, it's like, Jesus, let the guy take a nap or have a break.
Yeah.
Right? He's been going nonstop since like 1967. What you have are a new generation of people coming up who want to sort of make their bones in this field. And honestly, if you are out there being aggressive and trying to make your name in the UFO or paranormal field, please just go get a real job or a hobby or something.
Yes.
Because this is, it's so sad. But you know, it's like, well, you know, I'm going to look at this thing from 30 years ago that, you know, everybody, you know, sort of shat on, but now I'm gonna talk about why it's the most important thing ever, and I haven't seen it yet, but hopefully I will. The Bob Lazar documentary is coming out. He was silent for 30 years, and now he's speaking. Well, who cares? Who cares? Smart people have pointed out that there's no real evidence to back up anything. Not that Lazar isn't a smart guy who is involved in interesting work, but that doesn't prove anything about UFOs. But you can make a video with lots of giant letters on a screen that look dramatic and, you know, sort of say, hey, it's Bob Lazar. Hey, it's people looking for a payday. Hey, it's people trying to be relevant. Hey, it's people getting on podcasts, says a guy who's on somebody's podcast. But, you know, it's you go out there and you say, well, you know, 20 years ago, Sam Friedman or whoever said that Bob Lazar was, you know, that the story was, you know, a fraud or fake or whatever. But I'm here to prove it's real. You know, honestly, you know, honestly, good for you. You're getting a payday out of it. I will not begrudge anybody a payday. But I would. And I'm getting grumpy, but I would just caution anybody who's excited about glomming on to the guy getting a payday out of rehashing a 30-year-old story that you might look dumb for glomming on to a guy who's rehashing a 30-year-old story. Because honestly, you know, go to Wikipedia, you can rehash a 30-year-old story just fine.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was gonna say that I agree with that, and I think this is also part of the evolution that Tim was talking about. Some different things are gonna get tried to plug them in and see how different types of media work, if some stories can get recycled, if there's anything that can actually be dug up that would shed some light on some of these old stories. The standards of evidence are really questionable, and as I was saying earlier, I think sometimes people don't understand that, and I think sometimes they do understand it but try to take advantage of people that don't understand it. But don't you guys think that also this is something that's going to play a role in this, as we're getting a younger group that are trying to promote some different things, from secret space programs to Bob Lazar to TTSA. And something else that I think is going to play a role in this is the UFO conference itself is going to have to take another evolutionary step. Something's going to have to be done about the main media as Aaron was mentioning, the books have kind of fell by the wayside, and a lot of it's available online through video. And it's just not practical to run conferences anymore, the amounts of money that go in them. And if the objectives aren't, number one, to turn a profit, maybe some things can be done. But don't you think that the UFO conference itself is going to get an overhaul?
Yeah, I think that's kind of happening. Yeah. In a sense, it's slowly happening. We're kind of seeing it happening in a sense where it's like, at the very least, you're seeing more niche conferences, you know, where it's like that. They have just a secret space program conference, that kind of thing. And also, now I haven't been to them, but also like sort of like theme conferences. Like I think the Contact in the Deserts one is like a kind of a themed conference in a sense. Are people like hanging out like in the desert literally I don't know if it's like an outdoor venue or what, but it's like Adam, you've been there. What the hell is the layout of the conference? Is it like a
I'm familiar with the area. I haven't been, so that's a weird thing about that Contact in the Desert. According to reports, they've been getting huge crowds, you know, the last few
it's popular.
Yeah, so in that sense,
it's like the Coachella of UFO conferences.
Yeah,
like
UFO
conferences
aren't dying. I would expect it to die out, you know. But so yeah, I've gone to UFO conferences in the day. I have no interest in going now. But as long as they can find some angle to attract new people to those, you know, it's like the Tom DeLong thing, the UFO Congress, which is probably with Contact in the Desert, the two big congresses. They 2 years ago they had DeLong as the UFO Researcher of the Year. And this last year was Lou Elizondo, so they're, you know, they're trying to younger audiences to bring them into the thing. But at this point, it seems like a pretty outdated idea, UFO conferences with things you can do with streaming media. I don't know.
Go ahead,
Aaron.
I was going to say, from like even, you know, sort of straight up academic conferences are, you know, starting to change a little bit from the old, you know, here is a session where, you know, three people read papers and then people ask questions that are really just statements about their own research that are unrelated. That's beginning to change as well. There's a phenomenon called the sort of known as an unconference, where everybody at the beginning of the first day gets together and sort of there's a schedule on a whiteboard and you sort of talk about, to sort of mention what topics you want to talk about, and then people who are interested in those topics just go and discuss them rather than having formal presentations. Now, if we could, I'm not sure, with the personality-driven culture of the UFO field and the paranormal field, that probably wouldn't work because everybody is going to want to hear Nick Redfern talk about whatever Nick Redfern is talking about at that particular conference, for example. But in terms of conferences where maybe you don't have the budget to bring in big names, but you have a budget to bring in some people who are sort of medium names, and that you're able to market it as, you're not going to hear them give a talk, you're going to talk with them.
Right.
And,
meet and greet.
Sort of
you got to like,
things.
Yeah.
Yeah, meet and greet, but also, you know, how can... You know, because what qualifies somebody as a UFO investigator? You know, jack shit, right? You show up and you're a UFO investigator. Come talk with your peers, including these people you may have heard of or heard on podcasts and things like that. And you're going to be talking about these ideas and discussing new ideas and finding ways to move forward. Not quite an invisible college idea, but what if we made UFO conferences or paranormal conferences into opportunities for collaborative work and discussion, rather than listening to celebrities talk about their celebrity UFO ideas?
Yeah, paranormal celebrities, yeah, yeah. Well, I can't. Well, I will speak for Aaron because I think he'll say yes. So we'll. I'm gonna propose an idea on the part of Aaron and I that someone in the paranormal field should steal the idea going around the wrestling field of doing a conference of podcasters. And since I gave them the idea, they have to invite me and Aaron. So, but that was that would be a cool conference that was just like a string of podcasts, you know. Instead of the presentations, it was like podcasting right there live, you know, with people and people in the audience interacting.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I like that. That is nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, but I much like our friend Adam here, I'm an idea man. So all I'm saying is
someone
who's willing to fork over the money to fly a bunch of paranormal podcasters to Kansas City or whatever.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with the details. You'd be happy to show up.
No.
Right,
no.
Right. Right.
I thought about doing a conference,
but there's the idea.
I thought about doing a conference once, and somebody – Jeff Bellinger, who's a pretty big name ghost writer, a writer about ghosts, not a ghost writer. We were talking about it, and he quickly dissuaded me of the idea because he was like, "You could take the time you work to put on this conference, and this should go to all the people who are just sitting around and their only form of work is paranormal podcasting, and just." Take that time and just go and just like do the math and figure out what you'd make at McDonald's, and you're almost certainly going to make more money putting that time in at McDonald's. So like as long as you're willing to like lose money or work for free or barely make any money and put that money toward the next year because you're so psyched that you made money and shit and had such a good time, it's like if you're trying to like make money off of that, it's crazy talk. You know, so you have to be cognizant of that from the very beginning. And at that point, I was like, well, fuck it. I'll probably just go work at McDonald's.
Yep.
There's a lot of different skills that can go into the different aspects of this, too, that if it doesn't happen to coincide with your day job, it can just be impractical to take it all on. Like with the writing, It might be kind of fun to write, but then, there's the editing, the proofreading, the literally putting the book together, even if you do your own publishing gig. And then, like, with the conferences, the travel's a big... rejection. The travel's a big deal. But then even with that, you know, it's altogether different skills to be able to compose, put together an effective and engaging public presentation. Public speaking is altogether different than podcasting or writing a blog. And then these are a lot of hats to wear to be good at it, to be a hobby that – in many cases, we actually spend money on rather than make it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
You're right,
yeah.
Tim, that people need to be well advised and think about what they're hoping to get out of a little UFO research and, you know, interviewing a person or two. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like... anybody who's gets into this to be rich and famous, it's like almost certainly not going to happen. But you can probably – this is probably like the most honest advice I can give you. You're almost certainly not going to get rich, but you may become like UFO famous. And if that's something that like you can get off on, then then keep doing it, man, I guess. But to me it's like –
that's like a great name for a movie, UFO Famous.
Yeah, that would be a great movie, like about like an abductee or something. Yeah. So yeah, if you're yearning for validation, like you may be able to get it in this field, but at the same time, it's like it's hollow, dude.
Get into something else if you
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody on one of the UFO forums the other day said they're just arguing about semantics, and someone replied, that would be a great name for a UFO forum.
Yeah. That's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. It's pretty wild. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the future. I guess I'll wind down now because I've already grabbed you guys for an extra half hour. And Adam, I did have one question for you. I teased it when we were talking, setting this thing up. I'm afraid the answer is no, but maybe you can piggyback it into something. Did you ever – I think you're the only one of the – I know you're the only one of the four of us who even may have had any interaction with Bill Cooper. Did you ever deal with him, encounter him, communicate with him, or anything like that?
No.
Oh,
well, that was easy.
Yeah. Did Ken ever? I assume Ken must have fucking run into him.
Oh, you know what? I think Ken did, and there's a little bit of a, well, not really a story, but they had a couple of conferences out in Atlanta in the late 90s called Phenomicon.
Yeah.
Which were kind of a big deal back
in the late
90s. Yeah. No, late 90s and...
No, I mean, that's such a late 90s kind of like... I'm just imagining,
yeah,
like the font and everything. Phenomicon.
And so there was a lot of cool people there. I remember hearing about them, like... and they did them a couple of years. Robert Anton Wilson, actually Kerry Thornley. He was in Atlanta.
Nice.
He showed up there, like Ivan Stang and... all these people. And, well, Aaron will know about this, in the Bill Cooper book, it talks about one of those conferences, and Ken Thomas was on a panel with Bill Cooper, and
ooh,
Robert Anton,
yeah,
Wilson was on that panel too, and they actually did some kind of, Ivan Stang of the Church of Subgenius was there, and he started some ritual initiation to Bob Dobbs or Eris or somebody, you know, like a spoof religious thing to the Illuminati gods. And Bill Cooper got all pissed off about it. And I bring that up also because a friend of mine in Atlanta has a lot of this video that nobody's seen for years. He got it a couple of years ago, and we started talking about putting it up on my Historia Discoria site, so I need to check in on him with that. But anyway, that's a little story.
All right. Nice.
You don't sound too thrilled about my story, but...
I do. I was hoping for, like, some situation where you were, like, threatened or like, Bill Cooper.
I could have made up something where I got in a fight with him in a bar, and he took off his fake leg and hit me over the head with it, and that would have been totally believable. He was prone to do shit like that.
Exactly, and I'm seeking confirmation on that. Oh, man.
I think you should just start telling that story now.
Back in the day.
What's that,
Aaron?
Nope.
I'll say,
go ahead,
Adam. Should just, like, from this point, he should just tell that story as though it was true.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely.
If you would have gave me 10, you know, more of a heads up a week ago, I could have come up with something. But it's funny, just to close out. I actually bought a shortwave radio back in the day because different friends were talking about Bill Cooper, and you could only hear him on shortwave broadcasts. So I bought explicitly for that purpose, a shortwave radio to listen to Bill back in the day, and it was quite an experience. He would go on there, and it was quite obvious a lot of times that he was drunk off his ass, and he'd break callers, you know. That was the glory days, yeah, of shortwave radio patriot broadcasts.
He paved
the way.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about the way it used to be compared to being grumpy now. But yeah, the way it is now, where it's like you had to seek out the shit. Now it's like you're inundated with it.
Yeah, true.
You know, and even if you're like, I mean, we're inundated because we're friends and follow a bunch of people and sort of have this like interconnected community. But it's like, if you just get into this, you could, you know, I've told the story a million times when I first got into this field. It was like, I was turned on to that X conference in D.C. So I was like, I initially dipped my toe in the water to like the exopolitics movement. I'm like, these guys are really on the ball. They're really going to figure it out. I haven't followed UFOs in 15 years since I was in third grade. So apparently they're really close to getting the government to tell the truth about it. That was like in 2000,
yeah.
And that was 15 years ago. So you know, it's you get involved in this stuff, you could jump into the wrong thing, and next thing you know, you're a card-carrying member of like some real fringe point of view. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
At some point, when you keep hearing the same shit over and over again, it's like, oh, okay.
that's what happened to me, where it was
yeah.
like, wait a minute, now you, hold the phone. The government hasn't said shit about UFOs, and it's been like 2 years since I first fucking heard about you guys, so.
And you hear whoever, Steve Bassett or whatever, it's like, okay, he was saying this thing 2 years ago. He was right, the countdown disclosure clock. He used to have a radio show or a website where it was like, yeah, we're like 2 minutes from disclosure, and I have source.
Oh yeah, it was like the doomsday clock. Yeah,
and then whatever, Steve. I have a little interesting anecdote. I guess it'll be, you guys can tell me, somewhat funny. I didn't know who Steve Bassett was.
Way to sell it.
I was a speaker at the, let's see, it was the 2007 Roswell UFO Festival. So I guess that was like the 60th anniversary.
Yeah.
I think I got the right. And so I was hanging with Bishop and Nick Redfern, you know, and they put us up in some hotel somewhere. And so, yeah, went and did the Continental Breakfast thing, and we're just hanging out, and here comes all the UFO dudes. Stanton Friedman, I know, and with Bruce McAfee. It was like a who's who of these fuckers. Who else was there? Peter Robbins, who's a great guy outside of ufology just to hang with. He has some great funny stories.
Oh, yeah, Peter Robbins is great.
And then this other guy, who all of us, you know, we're just like just feeding our faces, whatever, having the first cup of coffee. Nobody was really too conversant at that time. But then this guy shows up and this starts going off about how Hillary was the disclosure candidate. This was 2007, so she and
wow.
Podesta,
for Obama.
He was talking about Podesta, and yeah, it's, I mean, on and on and on. I'm going, well. and so we finish up, and I'm walking away, and I asked Nick Redfern, who the fuck's that guy? Is he on the level, you know? And he said, oh, yeah, that's Stephen Bassett. He's quite sincere about this.
Yeah, was, Hillary... Hillary is the disclosure candidate. She was connected to this Rockefeller thing too, right? That was
I'm sure he told us all about it. I mean, it was like 8 o'clock in the morning. People, you're with a bunch of UFO dudes, so why are you preaching to all of us? That something wasn't quite right with the guy, but anyway, that's my little Stephen Bassett story.
Yeah, I forget. Oh yeah, you got a shortwave radio. That's how we got onto that. And you have to seek this shit out. I think that was kind of like, again, I'm going to sound curmudgeonly. I don't know if you guys should speak to me, but it's like that's kind of like, I think, what separates our generation from, you know, the generation coming up that we sort of like old man yells at cloud at, where it's like, we had to seek this shit out. You guys just have fucking access to it. So, you know, it's a completely different. You haven't paid your dues or earned your stripes or fucking had to dig out this shit like we did. You know, you're just being handed information. You're just being handed hot takes, you know, and it collides with the confirmation bias I talked about earlier, where it's like they just want to hear what, you know, they just want to hear what they already believe. Where with us, it's like you just sought out anything you could find and fucking drew your own conclusions because there was such a limited amount of shit out there.
Yeah. Hey, check this out. Even before the shortwave thing, it's probably 1988 or so. I used to always be into AM radio, trying to tune in interesting shit, you know. And there, occasionally you would come across stuff. And I came across Billy Goodman.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a signal, you know, his show was like from 10 to 2 a.m., and I came across him when he really first started the show. And it was one of those things where they had a signal out of Las Vegas where he reached across the country, so he got a listenership. But originally the show was about, he called it The Thing, and he was into, like, stories of Elvis Presley. This was after Elvis died, and ghost stuff. Kind of some weird shit, but he was in Las Vegas, and it's when the whole Area 51 stuff started. And so he was the initial guy that, and I tuned this in on the radio, you know. It was like I became an avid listener. He'd talk about seeking stuff out, and it was like, you know, a little bit of a secret society there. And you know, he had some of the original shows with Bob Lazar and a lot of these dudes, and Bill Cooper would come on the show. And, you know, it was just amazing radio. This was before, a few years before Art Bell. And I think Art Bell was influenced because he was working out at Las Vegas at the same time that he was influenced by Billy Cooper, who, you know, the show was a short-lived phenomenon, but it's where a lot of this stuff emerged as well.
Indeed. Well, yeah, that was the thing. That's kind of like, it's funny. All this shit kind of repeats itself in a way where it's like, at the end of the day, it's all about feeling like you're in the
mm-hmm.
know.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's like you just, yeah. you know, you think that you're privy to some fucking tremendous information that nobody else is smart enough to come and fucking find.
I was. But, and part of it, it's how the message got out about Area 51, though, from Billy Goodman. It got out from George Knapp, too, because he did television shows. But
I heard there's going to be a movie about that.
Yeah, and it kind of launched this whole thing where Billy Goodman, you know, they had some of the original conferences at the Little Alien, and Billy Goodman put together bus trips because, you know, they're getting these stories about going out to Freedom Ridge. Norio Hayakawa put on some early conferences. So, you know, this was kind of a nexus, the Billy Goodman Happen radio show, and a lot of stuff kind of launched off of that. And I didn't, you know.
What became of this Billy Goodman character? Did he die?
No, it was kind of a weird deal. It was a short-lived phenomenon. He started the show, only probably lasted a year or so. It started at like, it went from 10 to 2 a.m. And then they started getting bomb threats and shit at the radio station.
Jesus.
It was like, yeah, it was like he was spilling the secrets about, but he wasn't giving up the good fight, and they switched the hours to, then it was midnight to 2 a.m., because supposedly they were getting harassment or something. Then he went from 2 to 5 a.m., then he was off the airwaves, and it was weird because the show was a huge success, you know. This was like over a six-month period, a year, and then it was gone all of a sudden. And
weird.
And, you know, the people, Billy and other people, claimed that the powers that be drove them off the air, and who knows. But
is he still alive,
sounds like
though?
There was, no, he died, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. He moved on to other, like, Salt Lake City for a while. He had a show in Rhode Island, but it was really that period of a year or so where it was like
yeah.
a big frickin' deal, and kind of set the stage for what Art Bell did. I've heard Art Bell talked briefly about Billy Cooper, so he was aware of what he was doing, and Cooper talked, you know, he talked to all those dudes on his show, Lazar, John Lear, all those guys came on, and you know, right after the fact, right as that was going on, the whole Area 51 sightings and all of that stuff, and then, you know, Art Bell didn't get to it for 3 or 4 years after that.
So you know what amazes me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that this is completely off the wall. I was thinking to myself as you were telling that story, it's like they should make a movie, not necessarily about Billy Goodman, but like a movie maybe about Long John Neville, because that's kind of like he was sort of like the big star.
Yeah.
And then as I was ruminating on that, I thought to myself something that I thought when I first got into this thing, where it was like, at the time, I was like, they ought to make a movie about Nikola Tesla. I'm stunned that they still haven't made, like, a blockbuster movie about Nikola Tesla. I mean, I assume that there's probably been some, like, run-of-the-mill indie thing, but I don't, you know. I mean, they make biopics about, like, everybody. It's like, I'm stunned there hasn't been one, you know, a major Hollywood, like, biopic on Tesla. Considering amazing he was.
I think that's if you ever need an indication that the powers that be want to keep a lot of the Tesla stuff quiet. I mean, I think that's, I mean, not to sound crazy, but you know, why else would there not have been one other than, you know, somebody at various levels quashing it? It's like, no, not that. That won't be good. I suspect JP Morgan. But who is still alive as a head in a jar, probably.
I mean, probably
I vaguely recall seeing something on screen about Tesla, or maybe it was like a close take, like based on him. But no, it was. I never recall anything that was good or that. They'll be so fictitious it really doesn't even resemble what historians tell us happened, you know.
Yeah.
It'd probably suck anyway, so fuck it.
Yeah, that's true. It probably would, but oh man. All right, well, we could talk all night, honestly, but we've gone like 45 minutes past the hour, so I can't thank you guys enough. I'll drop an exclusive here, though, because I know you guys are on deep on the Banal Twitter level, and you know how I've been quietly and secretly transitioning into a lifestyle brand over the last few months. That's partially a joke, but also like how I just keep posting these food pictures.
Yeah,
I think I should become like the paranormal lifestyle brand. So I'll break some news here for everybody.
You're the new Rachel Ray. That's
yeah,
I think
exactly.
True.
Yeah. So yeah, I want to like have like the Gwyneth Paltrow whatever like side vertical or whatever of just paranormal lifestyle brand. So I'm gonna break some news here. And usually when I tease this, it happens. Anyone who's followed my food adventures on Twitter, I'm seriously considering a rack of lamb for Christmas. So we're gonna go. Yeah, we're going to go really intense. Yeah, I was eyeing them over Thanksgiving weekend, and I was like, I need to go bold here for Thanksgiving. So, and these rack of lambs, and they're like fanned in or something. I don't know. They're, you know, they're just like, there's two. They're like placed against each other. And I was like, oh, shit, that would be awesome. So that's going to
be
hopefully
great.
The banal Christmas meal.
The secret cooking that, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that is low and slow.
I mean, several hours.
Yeah, that makes sense.
220 or
yeah,
whatever.
That makes sense.
Last year for Thanksgiving, since I ban all turkey for holidays in my house, because I mean beef and pork are right
even
there,
on Thanksgiving.
So I hate it. I hate it. So last year for Thanksgiving,
it is pretty bland.
It is. My wife made this.
I disagree.
Bacon wrapped pork loin. That was just
oh wow
insane.
That's good, yeah.
It was insane. We've got one of these Instapots that we've never done anything with. So, Tim, if you want to get out there and do some Instapot pressure cooker experimenting that I could emulate, I would appreciate that. So I'll
look into that.
Binal,
yeah,
the Instapot guru might be a direction.
This is not even a joke. I don't. It's not a joke. So it shouldn't
no.
be taken the wrong way. Let me finish. because of what happened with the fucking bombing here, like anytime I hear pressure cooker, I'm just like, I don't want anything.
Yeah.
It's really weird, but that's happened a few times because, like, I'll see these sales where it's like pressure cooker, and I'm like, I don't even want any fucking thing to do with a pressure cooker. Just the words, like, give me the heebie-jeebies. It's really weird, but I should investigate it. I don't know about you guys because I just got this thing. I'll do a review right now on the show about the beer dispenser. I got the Hopsy, I opened it over Thanksgiving. And it's really good. It's very convenient. Essentially, you get, like, it looks like a slightly smaller, I'd have to measure it, but, like, a slightly smaller 2-liter plastic bottle that's pressurized and has, like, beer in it. And then you get this, like, it's from Krupp. Apparently, that's a good company, I was told. They partner with this thing. It's like, it
they
looks
do
like
coffee
a...
coffee products, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Krupp
it looks like
coffee products.
Thank you, sir. It looks like a submarine thing where you put the torpedo in. So, like, you open the thing, you shove the 2-liter bottle in, you fucking close the thing, you know. And it's like got like it's lined and it's like a refrigerator. It's big. I gotta take a picture of it. What got me to even bring this up is like talking about pressure cookers and stuff. It's like I find that I just don't have enough counter space for all this shit. And this in particular, my review of it is it's good, but you only get about a 6-pack of beer and you really just want to run through it in one sitting. And they're about $20 each, and if you're on the beer club, no, they're $15 each. So if you're on their beer club, they send you like 4 of them a month. So I guess my overall review is it's good. It's good for like special occasions, I think, but it's more, I'd liken it to like a crock pot. Or a pressure cooker, where it's like, if you're going to use, otherwise you put it in the cabinet, you know, but if you're having company over or something like that, then you bust it out, or if it's like the Super Bowl or some big event, then you'll take it out for the day and you'll use it, you know, as a home draft thing. But I can't imagine, and I like to drink, as everybody knows, I can't imagine it being like a permanent fixture on my countertop, because it's giant. It's a giant little mini refrigerator thing that I literally, I think the last time I drank out of it was like a few days ago and it's still running up there. So to me, it's like incredibly not efficient.
I don't know if it's a special occasion
device.
I don't know if a crock pot is a good example, but I get what you're saying.
Well, you don't have the crock pot sitting on your countertop plugged in or unplugged or just ready to go at a moment's notice.
It's like a pot I use to cook anything. You use it and you put it away.
That's what I'm saying this is. It's not like a coffee maker. It's not like a coffee maker. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But like, you know, beer has to be, you know, refrigerated. You don't want it to get stale. You know, you don't want to, you know, you want to use
up
what's in there. So yeah, Yeah, I can see that. I know they sell like the mini kegs that go in the fridge, and out here some of the craft breweries, and I've gotten them. It's just like I really should have waited
for
Yeah, and like I don't have enough people over for this event to finish this tonight. You know that's
right.
Sort of thing. So I've got for my home brew. I've got some like I use those 5-gallon. The old soda kegs, the old style soda kegs, and I've got a chest freezer converted to a fridge out in the garage, and it's just, you know, it's a maintenance nightmare, and I don't have time for the hobby as much as I want to, but it's nice to have it out there, but, you know, you need if you want to do something like that, you really do need like a basement or a garage to move it out of the living
space.
That's
where a clubhouse comes in. You got to have a clubhouse.
I know a guy with like a grown-up treehouse And it's just like,
I was
going
to say, my dream is to have a grow
up
treehouse.
How do I live this man's life, you know? Because that's awesome.
Yes.
I've taken
grown-up
over treehouse
is like my dream.
Yeah.
I have these bizarre, like, lottery fantasies where it's like, if I won the lottery, you'll appreciate this, guys. If I won the lottery, I would buy my neighbor's house and then, like, put a secret tunnel in underneath the ground. Like, build like a second house. So just so I knew that I had, a secret tunnel between the two houses. On that ridiculous note, Blog Talk is literally going to kick us off the air in 8 minutes. So let's go around and just do the plugs. Aaron, what's the proper website for the Saucer Life or whatever you want to plug?
Go to saucerlife.com. We're behind on releasing new episodes, but there's like 50 episodes to catch up on if you haven't heard them all. So saucerlife.com.
Awesome. All right. Adam, what's your hub that you want to send people to?
Oh, I don't care about doing that.
All right. Sounds good. When's the – I already harassed you about the movie. You have more control than about the book than the movie. When's the abductees book or contactees book coming out?
Very soon.
Should take advantage of the holiday season, man.
I think it'll be ready before Christmas, so I should have a proof in my hand the next couple of days just to review it. And it'll be very soon. I'll get the word out on that.
Awesome. All right.
Stay
Let me
tuned.
Know and I'll retweet it and shit.
Yeah.
And Jack?
I can be hooked up with at the UFO Trail. It's ufotrail.blogspot.com. It's one of those Google blogs, the UFO Trail, and you can see what I write about and a link to my book and that kind of thing there. And follow us on Twitter, too. I'm at the UFO Trail.
There you go. And I'm at Binal, and Adam is at Adam Go Rightly, and Aaron is at Furcon. So I think I linked them all through the thing. It's as I said at the start of the show, it's a perfect way to end it. You know, I love these guys. We share the same sensibilities in a sense. We're all of us, you know, we're kind of like looking down at the ground and kicking our shoes together just to do any plugs for what we're doing. You know, we're not the kind of assholes that go out there and the first thing we do is have a logo and a T-shirt. You know, if anything, we're like last. That's not important. That's really not important. You know, producing good shit is the key, and that's why I have so much respect for you guys. And this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much, Aaron, Adam, Jack. You know, I was like, how the hell am I going to do this? This is crazy, but. This turned into exactly what I hoped it would be, which is like just the four of us sitting around and just riffing on all kinds of topics. So thank you guys so much, and you know, hopefully we can do it again next Christmas.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all right.
Tim.
Yes. Thanks, Tim.
All right, guys. I'll see you in the Twitterverse. I got to plug my next show. So thank you very much, and we'll talk soon.
Thank
I'm sure.
you.
Yep.
All right.
Good
night,
guys.
Good night. Bye.
Wow, that was awesome, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. That was exactly what I hoped it would be, as I just said. You know, I've really grown to love those three guys. We've had just some of the most entertaining and amazing and fun conversations on Twitter over the last year. I've completely, like, shifted my attention over to Twitter and away from Facebook, which is awful. And those three guys have just become, you know, some of my best friends on there. And, it kind of dawned on me when I was like, okay, what kind of shows, you know, beyond Ruxgiving and the holiday special and New Year's thing, you know, what kind of shows can I do that are going to be special? It's not just going to be me talking to just one person. And I was like, I got to get these three guys on. Well, let's do it. Let's try and do a roundtable show. It would be awesome. So, and I loved it. It was great. And you're not going to have to wait long for another one of these roundtable shows because on next week's program, yep, we got another one, another special episode, Tuesday, December 4th. I want to say 8 p.m., could be 9 p.m. I'm going to have to check the time. It's going to be a Paramania Christmas, and it's going to be me, obviously, author Joshua Cutchin, soon to be dad, Joshua Cutchin, and the illustrious Red Pill Junkie, Miguel Romero. I think I can say his name, yeah. The Red Pill Junkie. And we have kind of similar to the gang on Twitter here, Joshua and Miguel and Greg and a whole bunch of gang, a whole bunch of guys and gals have become friends and gotten together every year, hanging out in different parts of the country for what we call Paramania. And so, as I said, thinking about shows for this holiday season, I was like, I just want to get my friends together and hang out. So that's what we're going to do next week. Joshua Cutchin, Red Pill Junkie, perhaps other folks from Paramania. I'm going to tell Greg Bishop to call in if he can. You know, if Steve Ray wants to call in. The only caveat is to get on the show, you have to have attended a Paramania. So if you get on the air and we find out that it's someone who's never been at one of these, we're going to boot you right off. But otherwise, we'll release the call-in number or whatever to the Paramania folks. And it's not going to be about Paramania per se. We're probably going to talk about a lot of the stuff you heard us talk about tonight. You know, the current state of the UFO field, the conspiracy culture, you know, TTSA, all the stuff that's sort of the hot-button topics, and other stuff, too. I mean, Josh just wrote a book about fairies that I want to find out more about. And, you know, Miguel has been tracking all kinds of stuff over the last year since we had him on the show, so we're going to talk to him about that as well. I'm getting distracted here because it's 11:58, and I'm going to hit the wall in, like, literal seconds, and they're not going to let me know what's going on. So thank you, everybody, who tuned in. This was an absolute blast. I'm probably going to be hurting in the morning, my throat, from doing another three-hour show. But it's been a lot of fun, and I hope people are enjoying our sort of like mini holiday comeback, because I've been enjoying it quite a bit. And on that note, until next week, this is Tim and all. Thank you for listening and signing off. Yeah.